Let me start with a general idea about the Sefer itself. Sefer Shmos is called Sefer HaGeula. And in keeping with that theme, I understand why everything till Parshas Bishalach is in this book, because that was the Geula. The Geula wasn't complete physically until the Egyptians drowned, and then Shira Chadasha Shibchu Geulim. Then we were called Geulim. But why the rest of it? So Yisro, very easy to explain, because the physical freedom had to be connected to the spiritual freedom, just like Pesach is connected to Shavuos, and we weren't completely free until we got the Torah, Ein Lecha Ben Chorin Ela Mishosik BaTorah. So I understand now why Yisro is in Sefer HaGeula. Mishpatim doesn't seem to be have its place here. Mishpatim is like Kedoshim, Kisetze, Parshios that contain a lot of mitzvahs, one after the other, could have been very well in Vayikra or in Devarim. And even more so, Truma, Tetzave, Kisisa, Vayakil, Pekude, which deals basically with the building of the Mishkan, should have been probably in Vayikra. Vayikra is Torah's Kohanim, the laws of the Korbanos, the laws of the Kohanim. Before you have Korbanos, you have to have a Mishkan, so the beginning of Vayikra should have been the building of the Mishkan. Why is the building of the Mishkan in Sefer HaGeula in Shmos? And why is Mishpatim in Shmos? So to answer both questions, the Ramban answers the second question. Why the building of the Mishkan is in Sefer Shmos. The Ramban says, with a little bit of my own enhancement, but the Ramban says the following. He says that Geula means to redeem your total potential, to go back to what the ideal state was before you lost it in Golus. What was the state of the Avos? The state of the Avos was that God's presence rested on their homes constantly. A constant relationship with the Rabbanu Shalom. The Avos are called the Merkava. So in that respect, the Geula wasn't complete until that level was regained. And that was when God's presence devolved on the Mishkan and became constantly connected and attached to Klal Yisrael. So now I understand why the building of the Mishkan, which culminated in God's presence returning as it was by the Avos, is this culmination of Geula. Still doesn't answer why Mishpatim is in Sefer HaGeula. So in order to answer that, I want to couple it with what we just said. The purpose was Mishpatim basically deal with civil law, laws that are rational laws, okay, as opposed to chukim, which are super rational laws. The truth is that that is not necessarily the case. I heard this from Rabbi Yashaber Soloveitchik. He spoke once to a rabbinical convention that I happened to be at, and he said it's true that the rational laws are in their black and white areas rational, but in the gray areas they're chukim. For instance, murder in its black and white areas is logical, rational, but in its gray areas I would never want to debate a person who favored mercy killing from a purely rational standpoint. Because you could put up a very nice rational argument that if somebody's in pain and they don't want to continue living and they're begging you to put them out of their misery, that should be okay to do. Why is it wrong? Because God said it's wrong. Because God said it's murder. Abortion. I could think of a very rational argument pro-abortion. Right? It's not irrational, but it's wrong because the Torah says it's wrong. So it's not necessarily a mishpat, it's not rational. In those areas, it's a chok. And that is a principle that mishpatim, it says, magid devar of Yaakov, chukov mishpat of Israel. The Rabbanu Shalom told his words to Yaakov, Chukav u'mishpat of Israel. He told us our chukim mishpatim. Lo asachen l'chol goy. We didn't do that to every nation. U'mishpatim b'agidom haluluka. It should have said v'chukav b'agidom. Which laws don't goyim have? Chukim. The super rational laws. They don't have kashrus. They don't have poraduma. But mishpatim? Every nation has mishpatim. Murder, robbery, right? They have a logical, rational, sometimes social justice system. So what do you mean mishpatim b'agidom? The difference between our mishpatim and their mishpatim is that their mishpatim are merely tools to create a functioning society, nothing more than that. It's human, rational laws that are made to be able to make society function. It shouldn't be anarchy. But our rational civil law is as much a part of religious law as kashrus or Shabbos or whatever. To bring that out, I heard the following maisa about the Tozer Rosh Hashiva, Reb Chaim Mordechai Katz, that's all. Somebody once asked him, Rabbi, an irreligious person who was looking to to criticize religious people. And he said, I don't understand these religious people with the long payas and the big beards who are dishonest, lie, and cheat in business. So Rabbi Katz said to him, you know, I have the same problem. I don't understand these religious people who eat on Yom Kippur, desecrate the Shabbos, and eat chazer. So the guy said, wait a second, those aren't religious people. So Katz said, neither were the first ones. Why do you assume that somebody who lies and cheats in business is religious because he does the other part of the Torah, when somebody who doesn't do this part of the Torah you consider not religious? They're both not religious. Religion has nothing to do with only the things between man and God. It has equally to do with the things between man and man. And it's one Torah. And the laws, the seemingly rational civil law is as much a part of spiritual law, and their mix is very, there's a very thin line, if any line, between them. Give an example. Give you a religious law that has implications to interpersonal relationships, and what seems to be a civil law that has implications to spirituality. Start with the first one. Torah says that if you have a treifa, now we use the word treifa universally as anything that's not kosher, but treifa is something specific. It's an animal that has one of 18 different kinds of maladies that will definitely cause its death within 12 months. 18 specific things, a hole in the lung, a hole in the brain, something like that. It usually is caused, but not necessarily always, but the Torah gives the usual, where an animal is mauled, a sheep is mauled by a wolf, a fox, a lion, and digs its claws into it, and pierces a lung, makes a hole in the brain, or something like that. That's called a treif. So the Torah says, "Ubasar basar the treif lo sochelu," and the treif, how do you know? How do you ever know that it has a hole in its lung, right? So the answer is you shechted it, and you thought it was a good animal to eat. And then you check the lungs and you found the hole. So you can't eat the animal now. It's a treifa. The whole animal, not just the lungs, the whole animal is not kosher. So that's called a treifa. Okay? It was shechted properly and then you found that it had one of these maladies. If it died before you shechted it, right, died of old age, it died because it was shot or it was killed by a wild animal, that's called a nevela. It's also prohibited to be eaten. It's a different prohibition. So the Torah tells you what to do with a treifa. Ubasar basar the treifa lo sochelu, lakelef tashlichu noso. Throw it to the dogs. So there's a logical reason for that, says the Ibn Ezra, because the Torah says a nevela, an animal that died of old age, or you shot or killed, you're supposed to give it to a goy. Sell it to an idol worshiper, or give it free to a ger tosha of somebody who keeps the seven mitzvahs of Noah. So the Ibn Ezra asks, why by the treifa it says give it to the dog, and by the nevela give it to a human being? Says the Ibn Ezra, because a nevela, there's nothing physically wrong with it. It's just spiritually not kosher, right? An animal died of old age, nothing wrong with it. If it was shot, there's nothing wrong with it. But it's not spiritually fit. So therefore, give it to a goy. It's not going to affect him. He doesn't have these laws. But a treifa is sick. So it may be that it may affect negatively a goy too, because goyim also don't like to eat sick animals. Dogs have a greater stomach, right? They can stomach things that human beings can't. So why give this poor goy a stomach ache, right, and give him this tainted meat? Give it to a dog. That's what the Ibn Ezra says. Interesting, because we're talking about selling it to an idol worshiper. Under certain circumstances, you're allowed to kill an idol worshiper to rid the world of idol worship. So why can't you give him a stomachache? The answer is because killing him and ridding the world of idol worship may be a positive thing. But stop to give him a stomachache for what purpose? So even an idol worshiper has no purpose to give him a stomachache. So that's the Ibn Ezra. The Medrash says what you probably all know. Why do we give the treifa to the dogs? Because the dogs held their tongue, literally, by Makas Bechoros. They didn't cry, bark. They got rewarded. What was the big deal, says the Vilna Gaon? So what if the dogs would have barked? What would have been so terrible? Says the Vilna Gaon, the Gemara says in Bava Kamma that when Eliyahu HaNavi is in around, it can't be seen, dogs are, what's it called, barking out of Simcha. And when the Malach HaMavis is around, dogs can sense it and they bark and whine. If the dogs had barked Pesach night by Makas Bechoros, it would have implied that the Malach HaMavis is around killing these Egyptians, when God wanted it clear that it was him killing them directly, Aniva lo Malach. So by the dogs not barking, he made a bigger Kiddush Hashem. He knew that it was God, not the Malach HaMavis. Otherwise the dogs would have been barking. So we give the dogs, we get their reward, we give them the treifa. Okay. Now comes what I want to talk about. Okay. The Daz Zakein Mibali Atosfos. The Daz Zakein Mibali Atosfos says, okay, all of that's Midrashim. What's the simple meaning of the pasuk? Why do you give this meat to the dog? Says the Daz Zakein, because flocks of sheep usually have dogs that protect them. Sheepdog. A herd dog. And you have now a sheep from that herd that you can't eat. So out of gratitude to the sheepdog who has valiantly protected and guided this flock, give him the sheep to eat. It's gratitude. It's only one problem. Do you know why you have a sheep that you can't eat? Because the dog didn't do his job. Because had the dog done his job effectively, that animal that mauled that sheep would not have been successful. But he was. So now what are you doing? You're rewarding the dog for not doing his job. Says the Daz Zakeinim, true. This time, the dog didn't do his job. But does that erase all the times the dog did do his job? That you don't owe him any gratitude? He has credit. So this time, so give him the sheep that you can't eat because of him, in gratitude for all the other times that he did his job. That's the Daz Zakeinim Bali Atosfos. What do we learn from that? The Torah is telling us how to treat a dog. Okay, you don't treat a dog that if he's done a lot of good things for you and one time he does you dirty, that it erases everything and that's it. How do we treat human beings? Right? People can be friendly with people for years. I know a lot of cases like this. And then one family can do something not nice to the other family. And what do usually people do? They write those people off. Nothing to do with them anymore. All those years that they did you favors or whatever is erased because of one thing that they do not nice? You don't treat a dog like that. Koshke, not a human being. So here is a kashrus law, right? Spiritual, bein adam l'makom, that has implications to bein adam l'chavera, that has implications to interpersonal relationships. Let's see the opposite case. We have a case of dalad v'hei, right? Person steals something. If he's a purse snatcher, walks in broad daylight and grabs somebody's purse, and they catch him, he has to pay back what he stole. That's it. He has to make restitution. If he sneaks in your house at night and steals your purse, and they catch him, he has to pay double, kafel. So one idea is a very rational idea, right? That somebody steals your purse in broad daylight. You saw who it was, you know who it was, and you feel terrible, but it's much less than somebody sneaking into your house at night. You feel violated. Right? Here's a guy, let's go, snuck into your house, and you didn't even know he was there, right? And you feel, mamash, it's aside from the stealing, you feel violated. Somebody invaded your privacy. So because of that, he has to pay a knas. He has to pay double. Okay, the Gemara says a different idea, which we'll get to in a second. You steal an animal, a sheep, and you sell it, or you slaughter it, then you have to pay back four times as much. You steal an ox, you have to pay five times if you sell it or you slaughter it. Why? Why this is four, this is five? So, one shot the Gemara says is because an ox does work. You take the guy's ox and you slaughter it or you sell it and finalize that stealing in a greater way, you've deprived that guy of the work of this ox. So you have to pay him back five times. But a sheep doesn't do work, so it's only four times. But the Gemara says a different idea. And again, these are rational, interpersonal laws. The Gemara says two other ideas in Kefil and in Arba V'Chamisha. One idea the Gemara says is a guy who steals your purse in broad daylight doesn't have the capacity to fear. He's not afraid of anybody. He's not afraid of God. He's not afraid of man. Somebody who sneaks into your house at night is not afraid of God, but he's afraid of human beings. Somebody who's afraid of human beings and not afraid of God is worse than a person who's not afraid of anybody. And therefore we give him a knas. Now what does this guy's Yerushalayim have to do with the fact what he has to pay the other guy? We're talking about Geneva, which is a interpersonal, rational, Benovim L'chaveiro, and now we're mixing in the guy's Yerushalayim. So you see that there's no line that separates between what's religious and what's civil. They mesh together. Similarly, the Gemara says that when the guy stole the sheep, he had to carry it. And it's embarrassing. So he already got one punishment. So we take off one. Instead of paying five, he only pays four times. Now what in the world? He chose to steal it. He chose to be embarrassed. But still, the Torah took his embarrassment into consideration, and for that you have to pay one less. So again, is that rational? No. This is already on the spiritual side. So spiritual laws mixed with rational civil law, there's no, and that's why you can't take a case to a secular court. Because it's never the same halacha. It could be the same thing. But the halacha deals with things, even civil law, as religious. And therefore, it's the Rabbanu Shlomo who's involved. If you take it to a civil court, you're giving either credence to the religion that's behind that court, and if no religion, it's secular, you're giving credence to secularism. So the Torah's laws, that's mishpatim bal yadom. It's not the chukim that God didn't make known to the nations of the world. It's the mishpatim. And therefore, the mishpatim, in order for God's presence to devolve in the Mishkan and to attach itself to the Jewish people on an ongoing basis, we have to keep mishpatim. And that's not going to help. We have to keep mishpatim. It's keeping those laws that are everyday, interpersonal, bein odom l'chaveiro, that's what makes the difference if God's going to have an attachment to you on an ongoing basis or not. Because if it's only when you're in shul, only when you're doing something spiritual, then you don't have that attachment to God in every second. And that's geula. Geula is where you maintain that attachment on an ongoing, constant, consistent basis. So that's why mishpatim is the prelude to building the Mishkan. Because you can't have God's presence attached to, unless you know how to keep mishpatim and make Torah part of your everyday life, not just spiritual things that seem to be spiritual. Okay, that's one idea. Any questions on this? So now I want to go to something else. which I deal with in my book, so I brought the book. It's much easier for me to see it here than to remember it. In this week's Sedra, we have Varapo Yerape. Mikan Shemitna Rashul Slarofe Varapo. From here, the permission was given to a doctor to heal. So, first of all, why did the Torah give the permission to the doctor to heal? Why didn't it give permission to a patient to go seek out a doctor's advice? That's the permission to the doctor. So some say what it means is you can charge. Not only can he heal, it's a mitzvah to heal, but he can charge for it too. Okay? And the doctor can charge anything he wants because he's not charging for the time or the procedure. He's charging for the knowledge that he has, that the training that he got, that he can heal you. So he's allowed, there's no onor by a doctor's fees because he's charging you not for the time.
What?
But
he should only charge if he heals.
No, he's...
If the doctor doesn't work, he doesn't have to pay. He's paying for his learning how not to. Chinese medicine is actually reversed. Chinese medicine works, you pay the doctor while you're well continuously, philosophy, and then when you get sick, you stop paying the doctor because he's not keeping you in
his pay. That's others say that giving permission to the doctor to heal means that the doctor could very well say, why do I have to get involved in this? And what if I make a mistake? And what if I don't know everything, and I'm checking, people's lives? The Torah says, no, you have to get involved. You have the knowledge. You have to take a risk. If it's a reasonable risk, right? If not doing anything, the person's going to die, and at least you can try to help him or whatever, then you have a responsibility to do it. The Ramban says a different idea. The Ramban says that really people should not go to a doctor. They should have emunah that the Rabban Shalom is the one who heals. He's Rofei Chole Amo Yisrael. And they should pray and do tshuva and do mitzvahs and realize that God's the one ultimately who heals them. But if a person doesn't have that emunah, so the Torah didn't give permission to people to seek out doctors. But if somebody goes to a doctor, the doctor can heal him. So they ask, how could that be? If it's wrong for the person to go to the doctor, how can the doctor be allowed to abet a person's sin? It's with me, evil or sitem mitzvah. I'm not allowed to help somebody do a sin. So if the patient comes to me, he's not allowed to come to me. And I help him, so I'm helping him do something wrong. The answer is very simple. What the Ramban means is the following. God deals with people according to their bitachon, the level of bitachon. God doesn't do miracles for people. Because if he would do constant miracles for people, we'd have no free choice. So there always has to be a measure of ability to see and to make the other choice. So God is not constantly impressing us with his existence and his involvement in the world. He has to be a way of seeing, not like that. Somebody believes that everything comes from the Rabban Shalom, and he accepts that as a fact, really believes it, doesn't just say it, but he really believes it, okay, and it's not something that you can gauge except how do you live, right? So, in other words, I'll give you an example of what that means. Yisrael Salanter once said, it was him, that if somebody buys a lottery ticket, and believes that the Rabban Shalom is the one who is going to decide which number comes up. And he has 100% emunah bitachon that he's going to win, will win. Because that he has bitachon 100%, he'll win. Whether that's the case or not, the Chazoni seems to argue on that, but let's say that's the case. Somebody bought the lottery ticket and he says, I have 100% emunah bitachon that the Rabban Shalom is going to be mezakim, I'm going to win $50,000. From this, lottery ticket. So Yisrael Salanter said, wow, if you're so sure and you're going to win, so I'll buy the lottery ticket from you for $45,000. I said, $45,000, you buy the ticket? He said, I'm willing to sell it. He said, then you won't win. Because if you were so sure you're going to win $50,000, why in the world would you sell it to me for $45,000? Must be that somewhere in your mind, you're not 100% sure. So might as well have the 45 for sure than take the risk of the 50. Right? Because if it was a sure thing, why would you trade me $45,000 for $50,000? Must be that, yeah, you really believe it, but you don't really believe it. There's a little place that, you know, you'll rather take the 45 in hand than take the risk on the 50. You're not going to win. So forget, I'm not buying the ticket. It means that you actually believe that and you function like that. Somebody who believes that 100% doesn't need a doctor. That's only the way I learned the Ramban, in a time when it was clear God's involvement in the world, in the time of Beis HaMikdash. When we live in Hester Panim, when it's not so clear, then what's going to happen is open miracles. Somebody is healed, without going to the doctor, without taking any medicine, he's going to attribute it to a miracle. And God doesn't do miracles. It has to be done in a natural way. But somebody who believes that the natural way is just a facade to cover up God's involvement, and to him it's the same whether he takes the medicine or doesn't take the medicine exactly, then for that person he'll be healed in a time when it wasn't, God's presence isn't here. Therefore, if I go to the doctor already, it shows I'm not on that level. If I'm not on that level, then not only am I allowed to seek out a doctor's help, I have to, because I'm not on the level to that miracle is going to be done for me. So if I already go to the doctor, it's a sign that the doctor's allowed to heal me, and there's nothing wrong for me or for L'chatchila, I should be on the level not to have to go to the doctor. But if I'm not on that level, then I have to go to the doctor, and maybe the doctor's allowed to heal me. Okay. That's one thing. There's an interesting Ibn Ezra. The Torah, when it speaks about the doctor being able to heal, speaks about two people fight, and one breaks the other guy's arm. So you go to the doctor, and says the Ibn Ezra, the only time you're allowed to go to a doctor is by humanly inflicted maladies. Somebody broke your arm. Somebody knocked out your eye. Whatever it may be. Then you can go to the doctor. But divinely inflicted things that are not visible, internal things, which come divinely, there you're not allowed to go to a doctor. We don't pass on this. Okay? Not at all. But that's Ibn Ezra. We'll see there's two ways of learning this Ibn Ezra. The first way, which seems to be the most simple way, is that the Ibn Ezra is of the opinion that people can cause other people problems with their free will, even if that wasn't God's will. God has given us free choice, and to a certain degree, he gives us, it's an Orach Chaim HaKadosh, a Zohar in Parshas Vayeshev, that the brothers, when they threw Yosef into a pit of snakes and scorpions, rather than killing him, what was their logic? I mean, same thing. No, we're Bali Bechira. We have free choice. We can kill him even if he doesn't deserve to die. But the snakes and scorpions can't. So the test is, we're going into snakes and scorpions. Okay, not everybody holds to that. The Chovas HaLevava says that people have free choice up to the choice. But whether you'll be successful in realizing, bringing your choice to fruition, is up to God. God doesn't let things happen in this world that he doesn't want to happen. So, if he lets you do it, it's because he wanted it to happen. That doesn't make you any more righteous or wicked. If you want to murder somebody, even if God wants that guy dead, until he tells you to kill him, right, through a Navi, if you kill him, you're a murderer. Even though God let you do it because he wanted that person. That's God's business. It's not your business not to murder people. Okay. In any case, so one way of learning this Ibn Ezra is the Ibn Ezra says that what people cause is people caused. And everything else is God caused. And therefore the logic is like this. If God made somebody sick, let him make them well. Why is a doctor interfering? But if a person made somebody sick, then the doctor can interfere. That's one way of learning the Ibn Ezra. Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz has a different idea, which may be what the Ibn Ezra means also. Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz distinguishes between external maladies and internal maladies. External maladies Right. External things you can observe. You can see that the arm is broken. You can see that setting the bone is effective. That's where a doctor can get involved. But internal things you can't see. See, it's not observation. You can't see what's going on. So it's very possible, therefore, that a doctor can only surmise what's going on inside. Therefore, he has no permission to heal. That's one way of learning of Yonson Apeshitz. Another, and that would make a difference today. Today, we have all these methods of examination, observation, x-rays, sonograms, whatever. So today, inside and outside are the same thing. That's, okay. There's another way of learning of Yonson Apeshitz. And that is that since external things are visible, you can observe it, so you can see what the doctor is doing, so it's not going to be it would be an open miracle if the guy's arm set itself. You can see what's wrong. Without any intervention, it's an open miracle. But what you can't see, if the person gets better, it's not an open miracle. You can attribute it to a million different things because we didn't know what was wrong anyway. So it heals itself. It's a human miracle. It's not an open miracle. The doctor is there to shield open miracles, to make a facade. But if anyway it's not going to be an open miracle, then you can't have the doctor. Okay? Could be that's what the Ibn Ezra means too. Things that are humanly inflicted, right? So it would be an open miracle if they were turned around without human intervention. Things that are divinely inflicted, that you don't see what the cause and effect is, so there it's not so clear. So if it's divinely healed, it's not an open miracle. You can attribute it to a million different things since you can't see it anyway, which may be different today, where we can see internal things also. Okay, that's an argument between, and the truth is that a person has to realize that ultimately it's God who's healing you. He's Rofei Chole Amo Yisrael. But the doctor is there because just like you have to earn a parnasa, right? Somebody who says, I'll pray and not go to a doctor, the Rambam says, is as foolish as the person who says, since God provides nourishment, I will pray and not eat. God wants you to eat, right? He wants it to go in a natural way. So just as foolish it would be to say, I'll pray and not eat, is I'll pray and not go to the doctor. The doctor is there to make it look natural, so God is not forced to do miracles and take away your free choice. So when a person goes to be healed, he makes the following prayer, right? Rav Acha said, Yiratzon, that this procedure, right, should be for me a cure and heal me, for you're a faithful doctor and your cure is true. Okay? So, people should realize that even though the Rabban Shem wants you to be involved in the natural process, that's not what's making the cause. Causing your healing is the Rabban Shem, but he wants it to go through a natural process. Okay? In fact, Rabbi Avigdor Miller Zatzal says an interesting point. He says, since all of medicine, all of therapeutic things is only a facade, it's not really the cause. It's just to make it look natural. Whatever people think will help at any different age helps. Because it's God who's doing it. He's just doing it through what people think is natural. So what difference does it make if it actually helps or doesn't actually help? He says the proof to that is we have records of operations that were done, primitive operations. Skulls, people used to have headaches, migraines, whatever. They put a hole in the skull, take away the pressure or whatever. And they must have worked because people kept coming back to these people. If it never worked, people weren't stupid then, right? They may not have had, high-tech things of today. They weren't stupid people. They were intelligent people, maybe more intelligent than we are. They wouldn't keep going back to these, cranks, right? If nothing ever helped. But today, according to modern science, there's no reason why they should have helped. The answer, he says, is people believed in them. The Mela, that's how God hid his involvement through what people think would help. In every generation, what you think is going to help, that's a natural way to do it. And since it doesn't actually make the difference, it doesn't make a difference what it is. As long as that's what's accepted in that place at that time. That's what Hinda Miller says. So that is the Rofe. Okay. So the halacha basically is that no one is on the level today to say that he can be healed without a doctor. He can just do it through prayer. No one's on that level. However, there is an idea that until things are necessary to go to a doctor, the Kilos Yaakov Stifler used to say, it's better not to know what's wrong with you until it's absolutely necessary to get medical help. Because once you know, it'll be an open miracle for you to be healed, and miracles people usually don't deserve. But if you don't know, and it goes away, so you don't know it was a miracle, it's easier to be healed like that. The Gemara says, so according to all of this, right, there's an idea that the Rofe, the doctor, is allowed to heal, the doctor is allowed to charge, the doctor is allowed to take a risk. So we find the Mishnah says, Tov Shabarofim L'Gehenna. The best of the doctors go to Gehenna. So it doesn't seem to be very, negative thing about doctors, right? So I have here in my book, that's why I brought it, seven different shotim in that. I'll go through with them. First, Tov Shabarofim L'Gehenna means that the best of the doctor always has Gehenna in front of him, realizing that he has people's lives in his hands, and if he makes a mistake, he could end up in Gehenna, so he's very careful to do things properly. Tov Shabarofim, the best of the doctor, LeGehenna, always has Gehenna opposite. Okay, that's one shot. Second shot. Somebody who considers himself the Tov Shabarofim, right, the best doctor, and he never asks anybody else's opinion, and he does things recklessly because I'm the best, that kind of doctor is going to end up in Gehenna. It's no shaykh, okay? Or the doctor who thinks that he's the best doctor and God is not the best doctor, right? He's taking God's place. He's not just enabling God to do things in a natural way, then he's going to end up in Gehenna. Third idea, Tov Shabarofim. A doctor is too good to his patients. He's too soft on them. Doesn't force them to do what may be painful, but he knows it's good for the patient. But he's too merciful on the patient, too soft with the patient. He's going to end up hurting his patient to be merciful, to be a good guy. Right? His bedside manner is better than his medical expertise. Right? He lets that take, right? How he looks in the eyes of the patient is more important to him than doing what's right for the patient. He's going to end up in Gehenna. Next. Some people say that there can't be a doctor and keep all the halachas. It's impossible to be a doctor and to be really frum. This doesn't apply today too much. Applied in years gone by. Shabbos and kashrus and millions of halachas. And they said that, we want to do a mitzvah and it's impossible to do properly, so we'll let the mitzvahs suffer and the medicine prevail. So when we send them to Gehenna, when God sends them to Gehenna, he's going to send Tov Shabarofim, the best of the doctors, the Rambam, to greet them. And when they're on their way into Gehenna, they're going to say, but God, it was impossible. And God's going to say, would you like to meet a very good doctor, the Rambam? He was able to keep all the halachas and still be a Rambam, still be a doctor, and don't tell me it's impossible, so you're invited in. So the Tov Shabarofim, the best of the doctors, will be invited to Gehenna to welcome in the doctors who said they couldn't do it properly. Next. Next shot is a cube shot. The best doctor is going to end up in Gehenna. It says that if somebody insults somebody publicly, then all the averis of the person who's insulted, or you speak Lashon Hara, go to the person who did the insulting, and the other person is cured of all of his averis. So the best doctor is the guy to take away all your sins. But he's going to end up in Gehenna, right? Because he embarrassed you or spoke Lashon Hara about you to do it. Another thing, Tov Shabarot from Gehenna means like this. A lot of times doctors, this does apply today, don't like to be on cases where the patient dies. So they sign off the case before, so they don't have that notch in their trigger, right, in their syringe of another death. There's a famous story with Rav Shlomo Kluger. Rav Shlomo Kluger, Shlomo Kluger was it Shlomo Kluger of Eisel Chorev? I think it was of Eisel Chorev. Right. He was a sharp guy. He said, well, he had once was sick, and the doctor saw that there's no hope, so he signed off the case, abandoned him. And he got better. So one day the doctor meets him in the street. He looks at him and he says, my God, did you come back from the dead? He said, yeah, I died and I came back from the dead. He said, I got to tell you, I did you a big favor when I was dead. When I was dead, I passed by Gehenna, and I saw a long line of people waiting to get into Gehenna, and you were on the line. And I asked, what's this line? And they said, that's a line of doctors who are going into Gehenna. What's it called? So I said to the Malach, take this guy off the line. He's not a doctor. He doesn't cure people. He abandons them. He doesn't belong in the line of doctors. In any case, so the doctor who wants to be the good doctor and not have on his record that he abandoned people, according to this, the Chozem of Lublin said that the doctor was given permission to heal, not to give up hope on a patient. The doctor can't tell you when you're going to die. All he can do is heal you. Right? The famous Maisa, that woman came crying to the Or Sameach, and she said, the doctor said, my husband has 3 days to live. She said, lady, no doctor in the world can guarantee your husband's going to live 3 days. And just like he can't guarantee he's going to live 3 days, and they can't guarantee he's going to die in 3 days. Doctors can heal. More than that, they're not Nevi'im. Go home, and Mirz Hashem, your husband will be okay. Okay. So those are the different pshatim in Tov Shivarofim Legehenim.